Metallica, here they come, the kings of metal!
Hey everyone, this is Tom Cui here from Alpha Metallica, and you're listening to Metal Up Your Podcast.
Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast. I'm Ethan Luck.
And I'm Clint Wells.
This is episode 255, and we're going to be talking to our good friend, Miss Sarah Sobeck, about the Aftershock Festival.
I will warn you from the top, we're here in a hotel room in Columbus, Ohio, and we were on Skype. We hit up Sarah last minute, last night, to see if she'd be available to give us a rundown of the Aftershock Festival. She was ever obliging, as always. She's a total sweetie pie. But we did have some technical difficulties towards the end of the convo. And we had to just make an abrupt ending.
We had to cut it short, unfortunately. The connection was quite terrible. But we, again, can't thank Sarah for her time getting up early with us.
So thank you, Sarah. We love you guys. All right, so let's get through some of this housekeeping, because I know everyone wants to hear from Sarah. No one wants to hear from us.
No.
They hear us every week.
Ew.
They don't get to hear Sarah.
Gross.
We actually got a lot covered. It's just the end it got squirrely.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think you guys are going to enjoy that. We want to say thanks to new patron, Kevin Stuckert, who he did a unique thing where he just donated to the show.
Yeah.
So you can always do that. I don't know how he did it. We have a PayPal link on our website or something.
Yeah, PayPal or something like that.
Does anyone have a website anymore? Websites are like very 2005.
I know, they are.
I mean, I haven't been to our website in probably 2 years.
I'm sure it's very out of date.
Well, thank you for the donation, Kevin. It really means a lot to us. We're on all the socials. You can keep up with our touring with Morgan Wade. We're out here on the road. We've got a 10-day break coming up that I know that I, for one, desperately need.
I'm looking forward to that, yeah.
And if you want to keep up with our comings and goings and all that stuff, it's all over the socials. You know what they are. Easiest way to get a hold of us, as usual, is through the email portal. So we're going to dip in now with some Metal Up Your Podcast listeners, and let's check it out.
Let's do it. All right, our first email is from Billy Coep. I think you pronounce her, or Cope. Hello, podcast. My name is Billy, and I'm 12 years old. I live in Manhattan, Kansas, New Jersey. This was my first podcast and still my favorite. I have been listening nonstop since April 2020.
Awesome.
Very cool. I just want to say that my Metallica story real quick. March 2020, my family was going to my grandma's house, and my dad put on Master of Puppets, and I absolutely hated it. Then, late March, I watched the first Metallica Monday, and I loved it. So the next day, I listened to all the CDs he had. Very cool. Good job, Dad. Now, because of this podcast, I started a Metallica collection. Metal Up Your Podcast has been a great escape from reality. I listen to this on the bus to school every day, and when I start randomly laughing, my friends look at me weird. Because of Metal Up Your Podcast, I've reinvestigated Reload. Now it's my second favorite record.
Hell yeah.
Clint loves that. I love both of your guys' energy and humor. I love when you bring the characters into the show. I also love when you talk about Mustaine.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you guys could do an episode like the 40th anniversary fantasy set list. To conclude, I just want to say thank you for creating this amazing content every Monday. Sincerely, Billy. P.S. I'm using the Pawpaw voice for a play I'm in. That's cool. And P.P.S. Where's the Lulu episode, guys? Come on, you got to suffer sometime.
Well, that's actually my 40th anniversary fantasy set list is Lulu.
Yeah, so there you have it.
So, and actually not even all of Lulu, just 20 performances of Junior Dad.
Yeah, exactly.
In a row. So, thank you, Billy. I really appreciate that, dude. Listening to us on the bus made me think of, you know, when I was on the bus listening to my favorite music. That's the shit that gets you through middle school.
Absolutely.
So,
oh,
I really appreciate
sure.
that, dude. And the Lulu episode's coming. You guys hang in there. I think everyone keeps asking about it, but when it actually comes and burns down, you're going to have to listen to it with us.
Yeah, you can't skip that one.
So just...
We need everyone's commitment. If everyone's going to bug us for years to do that episode, you can't be like, ha, suckers, I'm not listening to that.
Well, no, what I mean is we're going to do a commentary episode, so they're going to have to hear it. if they listen to the episode.
They have to hear it.
You know? All right. Eric Niswanger, who's a new patron, writes, "Hey, fellas, been listening to your kick-ass show for 2.5 years and finally getting off my ass and joining your Patreon.
Awesome.
You two do a great job and are clearly passionate about your work. I bought tickets to your St. Louis show on November 4th. Hope to get a chance to say hello in person. I wasn't turned on to Morgan's music until you guys started playing with her, and now I can't get enough."
Awesome.
"Ethan, I checked out your new album, The Golden West, and again, cannot get enough. I purchased it on iTunes, and I'm listening to it as I write this. It kicks butt.
I just can't get enough. I just can't get enough." Remember that song in the 80s?
Why don't you sing the whole thing for us, so maybe it'll jog my memory.
Really, all I remember is, "I just can't get enough. I just can't get enough."
I don't remember that, no? But it sounds okay. Like it's my loss.
Yeah, it really is. It's similar to We Buy Many Cars.
Okay, I will be attending both 40th anniversary shows, and I'm pumped to see the boys and visit San Francisco again. It's been several years since I've been to that great city, and I'm fired up to see the gang on their home turf. Finally, a question for you. With the boys pulling out a lot of seldom-played deep cuts from the Black Album lately, how do they practice these? Do they turn on the record and play along, jogging their memory, or do they pull out sheet music, or are they just that amazing that they remember it all and just need some brushing up? Thank you for the show, and I look forward to riding the rail in St. Louis. Eric Niswanger, Columbia, Missouri."
Awesome.
They definitely do not remember them. They have to learn them.
Yeah, a lot of times you have to relearn stuff. I mean, so, you know, maybe one of the dudes has, you know, a great memory of that stuff and can pull out the riffs no problem. And they're getting together at HQ to rehearse all this stuff and polish it up and stuff like that. I don't think any sheet music is involved.
No, there's definitely no sheet music involved. What I mean, I've seen videos of them like from like the early aughts where they're going to play Jump in the Fire that night, and like they have a CD player. And someone had burned a copy of Jump in the Fire.
Right.
And they're just listening to it on a CD player, like getting...
Yeah.
I guess you could call it brushing up, but it's a little more than brushing up.
Yeah.
And Namarda told us a story that Cliff Bernstein told her is that they wanted to get to the Louisville Louder Than Life Festival gigs early so they could practice Don't Tread on Me, because Lars really needed to practice the drum stuff. So
yeah.
They're rehearsing and they're doing what all bands do, hashing it out at sound checks and stuff.
They put the TLC in, and we appreciate it as fans. So it translates live and kicks ass.
Yeah, I mean, you can't just show up and play My Friend of Misery after not playing it for how long?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Now, Sandman, do they have to practice Sandman? No,
no.
I mean, you can guess the ones that they have to practice and the ones that they don't. They
yeah.
don't. But the seldom ones, the rarities, like the Unforgiven 3 for S&M, they had to work that up.
Oh, yeah.
Especially it was a unique arrangement with just James singing. And you can see the tuning room videos where James actually is holding a guitar to make sure he's kind of in the same spot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Greg, their producer, is watching him do it. And, you know, I call it the magic trick. The magic trick is we show up on stage and play, and it looks tight and right, and it looks like we've been doing it forever. But you don't see all the stuff behind the scenes that make it come off that way.
Exactly, yeah.
It doesn't just manifest.
Right. Well, I mean, if it did, that would be amazing, but that's not the case. It's not.
Well, that would be actual magic instead of the magic trick.
Right.
And we all know, hopefully out there, real magic, unfortunately, yet to be discovered. Magic trick, though?
Magic trick.
Nothing better.
Shoot.
There's nothing better than that.
Absolutely.
All right.
Our next email is from Bobby Anand. He says, "Can you provide tour stories specifically in relation to the show and how you thought of transitions between tracks? How you work with the venue's lighting director, how you handle live harmonies. From the Instagram Live, it looks like as though there are no harmonies on the tracks. And really give a deep dive into whether you were able to change any of the original arrangements to match up with your playing style, i.e. tunings, solos, song lengths, etc. I think people would love to hear how two professional musicians treat their day-to-day work. Bobby."
Well, this kind of dovetails right in. So Bobby, for some context, he's talking about the Morgan Wade tour that Ethan and I are currently on. So let's just take it line by line here. How you work with the... What's the first thing?
The transitions between tracks, for instance.
We had rehearsals before we started the tour, and we knew that we wanted to, you know, do 1-2 punches from here. We built in little breaks for band intros.
Right.
There really wasn't that much, you know, deliberation about that. There's a flow to the show that presents itself and kind of makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
And then there's like a couple of moments where we need to tune, and so it's helpful to put a band intro there.
Yeah, as far as working with the venue's lighting director,
I do that.
Yeah, Clint does that.
So I made a set list. On the set list are indicators for which songs are up songs, mid-tempo songs, or down songs, which will obviously denote what the lighting vibe should be, because we don't have a lighting director that we travel with. So usually the kind of clubs we're playing, the venue provides somebody who works for the club. And so I have those indicators on the set list. And then I have also, it'll say stage right solo or stage left solo. So if there is a spotlight situation, they know where to, you know, because people who don't know our show, they hear a solo coming off the stage. They don't know who's playing the fucking solo.
Right, exactly. They might light up, you know, the bass player.
So if I have the song Wilder Days and it says stage left solo, that means when Ethan starts playing leads, they just put a light on him. And so there's other general notes that I will put on that set list for an LD that say like, oh, the other thing I started doing actually is I started actually adding specific colors for certain songs.
Oh, cool.
Now, not every room we play is set up to accommodate that. But like I did notice that the show we played in Cincinnati, which was one of our weirder shows.
Yes.
They had a great LD,
yeah.
And every color that I put for the set, he did.
Yeah, and also noticed that, you know, anytime there was a lead, it was,
yeah,
we were lit
they
up.
They paid attention.
Yeah, right
It was
away.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay, next question was?
Handling live harmonies.
It says it looks as though there are no harmonies on tracks. Yeah, we're not playing the tracks at all.
No tracks.
So everything coming off the deck we're doing, in terms of harmonies, our bass player really does the heavy lifting on harmonies.
Yeah.
Ethan and I hold our own on stage left and stage right.
Right.
That's not hard to do. We both know how to sing. Really give a deep dive into whether you were able to change any of the original arrangements. Not really.
No, we're pretty much playing the record as is. You know, there's one song that on the record is all acoustic that we added a whole like kind of texture to towards the middle of the song to the end. But other than that, staying true to the record.
We're basically playing the record, but we're kind of beefing it up a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, because the record is like an awesome sort of Tom Petty, Americana, jangly thing. And then live, we're trying to kick people in the face. So
I think we're achieving that.
We beefed some stuff up, but we didn't really change any solos or anything. The coolest thing that we did do is we do a cover of Suspicious Minds by Elvis, and we were wanting to find a way to do an AC/DC cover in there.
Yeah.
So one night in our hotel room, it was me and you, right? Me and you and Johnny.
And Johnny, yeah.
Johnny Sword. Is we basically came up with a way to do a snippet of You Shook Me All Night Long in the middle of Suspicious Minds.
Right.
And I actually still have the voice memo of that where we were just like...
pillow drumming.
We were like drumming and just singing it a cappella. And that's actually what we played for Morgan.
Yeah.
When we wanted to show her the idea. She could, you know, she's a great artist. So she could hear what it was going to be. We shed that out in rehearsals.
Yep.
And then when our record label heard or saw our version of it, like from Louisville, one of our first shows, they immediately wanted her to record it. So
pretty cool.
That's an example. People would love to hear two professional musicians treat their day-to-day work. Most of our days are just driving and
you're listening to it,
being grumpy in hotel rooms.
Yeah, we're in a hotel room right now in Columbus, and we got to drive to the next city, which is the last stop on this leg of the tour, which will be nice to head home. But I mean, a tour like this, you know, is a lot of driving, you know, a lot of gas stations, you know.
My wife just said, she was like, yeah, you're coming home tomorrow. And I was like, yeah. She was like, will you be here in the morning? And I just wrote back, it's an 8-hour drive.
Yeah, it's a long drive.
It's going to be the whole day. But that's the price we pay to rock.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, so I got nothing to follow that up with.
All right, well, I hope we answered your question, Bobby. Thanks, and we will see you out in L.A., homie. Nick Peterson says, hey, guys, I'm a new listener / subscriber to the podcast. Started from the very beginning about a week ago. I'm only on episode 13, and I'm so glad to see how huge you've gotten since starting Metal Up Your Podcast.
Yeah, that's pretty fucking big.
I think he means, like, I've gained some LBs,
yeah,
is what
exactly.
He's talking about. I'm committed to binge as much as possible and get caught up to present day, but with 3 years of your shows in the vault, it could take me a while. I discovered Metallica right after Justice was released in 1988. I was 13. I got my money's worth out of Camelot's cassette tape guarantee on their first four albums. They became and remain my favorite band of all time. While the band has been a mainstay for me almost my entire life, it's taken on a deeper importance since I started listening to you guys. Thanks for reviving my love for the band through your podcast. Speaking of the podcast, I enjoy all of it. Ethan's hatred of Outlaw Torn, which I don't remember that.
Not hatred. I mean, I think maybe he's referring to the thing I've been exonerated from.
Oh, you not knowing that it was on S&M even after you looked it up.
Right.
Clint's ice chomping, Torben's guest appearances, even commentary and opinions I don't agree with one exception, Clint's choice of vodka. Seriously, passion fruit?
Dude, you have no idea. That was delicious.
Well, I think I've only had it two times in my life on two of our episodes.
Yes.
And I think they quit selling it after that. He says, I admit I've never had it. Despite my better judgment, I'm going to try it and report back. Well, good luck finding it.
Yeah.
That's how much I enjoy you guys. Regardless, it seems to serve you guys well on those two episodes you recorded back to back, judging by the case of the church giggles. I'm looking forward to plowing through as many of your episodes as I can, and maybe someday in the future, I'll hear you read this in an episode. By now, you've got thousands of subscribers, so the likelihood of that is probably slim. Again, thanks for what you're doing. Cheers, Nick Peterson. Well, Nick.
Here we are, Nick.
Here we are, baby. We just read the email. It is now 25 years in the future.
Yeah, if, as you're listening to this, welcome to the past.
A zombie apocalypse has already occurred and been solved.
Yeah.
The remaining community of human beings have been mating and procreating and starting a new civilization. And that has all happened.
Right in this hotel.
Right here in Columbus, Ohio.
This is our new home.
And we were here to read this email to you. So
we Clint have ZZ Top beards now. It's pretty cool.
We are ZZ Top now.
Exactly.
Because no one has any recollection of recorded music. So we're able to take all recorded music and pretend like we wrote it all.
It's pretty awesome.
Ever heard my new song, Inner Sandman?
Dude, I have this new song called Yesterday. It's kind of an acoustic number.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much, Nick. Next email is from Kevin. Just nothing but Kevin. Hello, brothers. Can't do it too much this morning, guys. Sorry. I've heard many times throughout the episodes, mainly the more recent ones, that you guys are surprised people are still jumping in the Patreon. To you guys, you have been doing this for 5 years, and it probably feels hard to see from a fan's point of view, but to me and probably many others, this podcast is still fresh and new. It doesn't feel 5 years old because I've only been on the ride for 7 months. Someone right now must be discovering Mel Up Your Podcast, and they'll want to join the ride at some point. I think it's just never ending until someone goes to join the Patreon and finds out you guys retired Mel Up Your Podcast and yells, no! Anyways, just wanted to say, don't be surprised when people jump on the old Patreon, because it's great and an exciting ride to jump on. Also, a fun shirt to have. Peace and adios, Kayvon 84.
Well, I appreciate that, Kevin.
Thanks for the encouragement, man. That's awesome.
Tominic B. writes, first of all, kudos to you fine gentlemen for nailing the pronunciation of Tominic. Most people don't even try. Secondly, if not obvious, I've heard the new episode. I try to stay up to date on the newest of the new and then fall back to getting caught up on the past. Speaking of the past, you guys gave me a message from the quote-unquote future about the upcoming Jay Weinberg episode upon my horizon. However, I listened to the episode the day after. So your message from the future is actually the past, and everything that is happening now is the now.
Whoa.
He says, holy fuck, I think we destroyed the time-space continuum. Anyway, I love the gear episodes. I love all the episodes, really. I really enjoyed hearing about your own personal first guitars and gear. I still have my first guitar, which was my mom's second guitar, a 1967 Gibson. It's in need of some love, which I plan on giving it. Anyway, wanted to let you guys know, I thought it was pretty rad hearing my email read on the show. Hopefully next time, I won't miss you guys the next time you're in my neck of the woods and we can partake in the beverages after the show. Really dig your covers, Lunar Satan, and honestly, Ethan, I'm digging your reggae.
My man.
Words I never thought would ever leave my mouth in that order. Cheers, gents. Tom from R.I. Little Roadie. Definitely not New Jersey.
Which is in New Jersey.
Yeah, I mean, if you take a right after Hoboken, you get to definitely not within a couple of hundred miles.
Yeah, so. Absolutely, for sure. And we were just in New Jersey.
Well, listen, we took the train to Asbury Park from Penn Station. And so we saw a lot of New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
It was about a two-hour train ride, looking out the window. Some of it was inviting and beautiful, some of it not so much, but so is Nashville.
Yeah.
But when we got to Asbury Park, we had a fucking great time. And now my wife wants to move there. And I'm not even kidding.
And, oh, no. You are correct. She was very much in love with that part of New Jersey.
It was fucking awesome.
It was great. I love it up there.
And with that, we must go and talk to our friend Sarah. MetalUpYourPodcastShow@gmail.com. Thank you so much for writing in, telling us your stories. I love hearing from Billy, the 12-year-old who listens to us on the bus.
So cool.
That's
Thank
one
you,
of
Billy.
My favorite things.
Hey everyone, this is Ethan and Clint. We're here to tell you about supporting the show via Patreon.
That's right. Every week, Ethan and I work hard to bring you the best Metallica content possible. If you think the show has value, consider supporting us on a financial level at Patreon.
For $5 a month, or the price of 2 cups of coffee, you can ensure that Metal Up Your Podcast continues to grow in quality and content. But that's not all.
In addition to being able to help sleep at night for supporting your favorite podcast, we've also come up with incentives to say thank you that are exclusively available to patrons. For example, for a pledge of $5 or more, you immediately get free downloads of every cover Our World Blackened EP.
Ticket giveaways for shows like SNM2 and Slane Castle.
Box sets, rare vinyl, Metallica memorabilia like SNM2 guitar picks.
Email priority, meaning we'll read your email first on the show, with a chance to ask guests like Hailstorm, Jay Weinberg of Slipknot, and Metallica Road Crew your very own questions.
And the opportunity to come on the show as a guest for our Metal Tales bonus episodes, in which you can tell us all about any Metallica show you've been to in the past.
All this and more for becoming a patron and supporting Metal Up Your Podcast.
We couldn't do this show without you, and to everyone on the ride with us, we sincerely thank you. Peace.
Adios.
Okay, we are here with our good pal, Sarah Sobeck of the Sarah Van.
The Sarah Van, of course. Everyone
which
knows
we dubbed, I don't know, 100 years ago on this podcast.
103 years ago, yes.
And we're going to be talking about the Aftershock shows and also all of your wonderful Met family travels. So first of all, thank you for getting up early and taking time away from your very important job to say hi to us knuckleheads and talk about Metallica. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you, too, and it is my pleasure. Like, I could literally talk to you guys every day.
Well, we'll call you every day from now on. No problem.
Well, what's going on? I see you're sporting your classic, I mean, it's basically a staple now, Sarah, with the yellow bandana.
Oh, yeah.
That's how we know her on the rail, right?
It's her flag.
It is the Sarah Van flag.
And you know what's really cute? Like, we go visit our friends, and, like, a lot of you have children, and the little girls mostly, like, every time I see them, they want to wear my bandana in pictures, and it's so cute. Like, I don't know what to do. So, like, I've actually sent them one of my bandanas because I'm like, they're so cute with it on. I have to just give it to them.
You could mass produce them and sell them to the masses.
I mean, all it would take is maybe a Sarah Van logo, get that printed on a bandana, maybe make actual flags out of it.
What's the Sarah Van logo? It's like a van in motion.
In motion, yes.
And what's on it? Like, oh, you know what? SV or Sarah Van, and the S and the N are like the Metallica slashes.
Or they're like the S&M font or something.
Yeah, there we go. Ooh.
Lots of ideas brewing over here, man.
I think that the Sarah Van might be the first official, like, spin-off of Metal Up Your Podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, yeah, listen, I mean, you were pretty much one of the first people, listeners, now friend, that, you know, we met in person.
Yeah.
And we will be expecting residuals for all the money that you make off the bandanas.
Absolutely,
it's
yes.
It's only business. It's just business.
It's just business, baby.
Is that possible? I don't even know how to make money on things.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm like, I guess people do it. I don't know.
Well, I'm a big fan of the Field of Dreams vibe. If you book them, they will come.
Exactly, yeah. If you print them, they will come.
I said book them, they will come. That's Wayne's World 2.
That was Wayne's World
2. What's the Field of Dreams one that they were ripping off?
If you build it, they will
come. If you build it, they'll come. I guess confusing a baseball field with Wayne Stock.
Wayne Stock.
Well, you were going to come see us play in Webster Hall in New York, but you were tied up with some weather because you were traveling. So tell us about what the deal is with the traveling you've been doing.
Oh, my gosh. So Pete and I left, I think it was, I don't even know what month I'm in right now. So I think we left September 20th. I don't remember the exact date. It was whatever day the Chicago surprise show was announced. We left New York that day. And the original plan was we were going to my sister's wedding in Portland, Oregon. And then Metallica announced the Chicago show and things changed a little bit. We're like, oh my God, we have to try and make this show. So it was right on our way. We tried to stop in Chicago. It didn't work out. We met some friends, but, you know, the show obviously didn't work out. We didn't make it. So that day kind of just, like, was a blur because, you know, and then Pete and I have been talking about our, you know, the Sarah Van and stuff and, like, things we want to do. And I said, you know, we should maybe do some live videos because get more people watching us. And to tell you the truth, like, sorry for my language, but we suck at it. We, like, suck at live videos. We suck at, like, everything that is, like, it's so
I thought
bad.
You were going to say something worse than suck when
yeah,
you preface it with part of my language.
Darn it,
part of,
Sarah.
Part of my language, but it was a bunch of bull crap.
To heck with that.
It was really cute. Like me, I don't know as a person watching us if it's as cute as me watching Pete try to figure out how to use the camera and all that stuff. Like, I thought it was really cute, but I don't know. I could see where it's really annoying if other people are watching it. But I was like, we got to start doing stuff like that, like doing live Instagram, whatever it's called. I don't know the lingo. So we did our first live Instagram, which was kind of fun. We had some interaction with friends and people kind of cheering us on the way to get there. So it was really fun. But we're just trying to have fun and let people see us having fun. And maybe that'll make other people stop and think about life isn't always crappy all the time. You just kind of got to make things happen.
I'm sensing a theme of fun.
Well, we know a little bit about fun over here.
I mean, dare I say always?
So what's it like driving to that gig? Because you had to have known there was it's a coin flip of whether or not you're going to make it. What do you do when you get there and you realize you can't get in? Is it like let's get a hotel room? Or
it wasn't even a coin flip. We had like 90% it was not going to happen.
Right, that's right.
Because we know like the bubble that they're in, and they're not going to take any chances having it be more than capacity and stuff like that. And if they let one person in, they probably got to let everyone in, because that's just not fair. So, I mean, I was already banking on not getting in, but had to at least try. And, you know, maybe we would see some friends along the way, which would make it awesome anyway. But we just pushed through. We didn't stop. We didn't stay. We left. Like, after they said they were going to get the cops to come clear the sidewalks, we're like, let's just get out of here. And we just kept pushing through.
Yeah. So what's after Chicago?
And then Chicago, our friend Joe that we travel with all the time.
He's the t-shirt guy. That's how I think of him.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Joe has he does. He has an amazing collection, not just t-shirts. I stayed at his house a couple months ago for a week, and I didn't look through his collection or anything. He showed me kind of briefly things, but he just moved into his house, so a lot of it was still in boxes. And so I took a little quick video of his, you know, Metallica room. And he not only has the history of Metallica through their t-shirts, which is his big thing he's known for, but he has some really, really cool stuff that I've never seen at anyone else's place. Like he has the very last signature from Cliff Burton as he was getting on the bus.
Wow.
Wow. Crazy.
You really can't wrap your mind around it. It's like some people have some really awesome historical stuff. And, you know, that I thought at Joe's, because people just know him as a t-shirt guy. But he has obviously I didn't have time to go through everything, but he has some of the coolest stuff, some of the most historic stuff you'll ever see.
Amazing.
That's awesome. Yeah. I have a Nashville poster. Is that cool?
I have a Nashville poster that has a typo. That's true. That's pretty close to a Cliff Burton signature.
Yeah, I think we're on par with that. Yeah, what we're saying is we're going to open a museum sometime soon.
Yeah. Go with my stuff, all my Beverly Hills 90210 dolls.
Hey, there we go.
Come on, Bryn.
So after we left Chicago, it was already in the plan to stop in Washington and visit Joe's mom. So I was like, we're not going to see Joe, so let's go visit Joe's mom. And so we stopped in Spokane and we had dinner with Joe's mom, and she's so sweet. Like, her and Joe are like the spitting image of each other, their mannerism. So I felt like we were with him, and we had no intent to see Joe this entire trip because he's all the way in LA and our final destination was Sacramento. So it was like, how are we going to see him? But it actually, he turned 50. He had his 50th birthday, and Pete and I were like, we love him. He's like our brother. Like, if it was my brother's 50th birthday, I would make it to the birthday. So we drove to LA and surprised him.
Oh, wow. That's really sweet.
That's incredible. Yeah. What was his reaction to that?
He was in, I don't know if you guys, he posted, if you're friends with him on Facebook, but he posted, I took a video of the surprise of him walking in the door.
That's
and
cool.
He posted it. So I'll send it to you guys. But he was totally in shock.
One might say he was in aftershock.
Aftershock.
Yeah. And it was really sweet because it was the first time I saw him a couple months ago when I came to California by myself. But it's the first time him and Pete had seen each other since since Ray's service. When Ray passed away, they hadn't seen each other since then.
I think the last time I saw you, we hung out right next to the Comedy Cellar and had such a good time that you puked afterwards.
Oh, Oh my God, I never ever like. It's because we played beer pong. Yeah. I was so drunk, and we were mixing because people were buying me shots too. We were killing it at beer pong, and I don't usually drink like that. I think I threw up outside the Comedy Cellar. I threw up in my cab on the way to Grand Central, and I got off my train and threw up in the tracks.
Which I wouldn't wish on anybody, let alone my buddy Sarah. But in retrospect, it's kind of an amazing story.
Yeah, well, I mean, and anyone that knows Sarah personally, like, you don't really two beers and it's bedtime.
We were having a good time. It was like me and the whole band, and we had I guess we had a day off, or we had done something that morning, and we were just having a good time.
And to tell you the truth, I don't know it was 100% the alcohol. It was also that really greasy pizza we had right next to the Comedy Cellar, like. There was that pizza place, and it got this slice of pizza, and it was just so greasy. I was like, and then everything hit me at once, and I was like, yeah, I can't go in with you guys. I got to go home.
So basically a quintessential New York evening.
Yeah, exactly. So a Tuesday night, yeah. Actually, we saw Sarah and Pete. They came through Nashville. Remember?
That's right.
They did like their quarantine travels.
That's right.
They had a fire pit in Clint's backyard.
That's right. I remember that. Me and Pete had a riveting convo about Quentin Tarantino.
And I threw up in the fire.
And then, Ethan threw up in the fire. In his car, and then also right in his driveway when he got home.
Yeah, exactly. And then I threw up on my dog, who was sound asleep by the back door.
But that's unrelated.
Oh, yeah, totally unrelated. Yeah, I was fine by then.
So when you saw Joe, was that after or before Aftershock?
It was before Aftershock. So we got to Sacramento on like a Monday. My mom lives right outside of Sacramento, so we were staying at my mom's for a couple days. And then we're staying at my cousin's house, who lives right in Sacramento. And then we dropped our stuff off at her house and decided that night, like, we're driving to Joe's.
That's cool.
Gotcha. And then we drove to Joe's, spent one night, and poor Joe, he didn't get home from work until like 10:30 at night, because he's a camera guy for like TV, and they didn't finish till really late. So it was like 10:30 at night. So he got home super exhausted. But, you know, he hadn't seen Pete in almost 2 years, so they wanted to catch up all night. And then we were up till like 2 in the morning, and Joe had to go to work at 7 in the morning.
Man, it's kind of like, I mean, the Alec Baldwin thing aside, it's kind of a big thing going on right now with film crews and just how fucking hard they work, everybody.
Long days, for sure.
7 to 10?
Yeah, so as soon as he left, we hit the road.
So you went back to Sacramento. But was Joe not, did he have to work? Was he not planning on going to Aftershock at all?
Yeah, he wasn't, not because of work, more because of the Hollywood bubble also, because if he left, then he'd have to quarantine for however long before he could go back to his show.
Yeah.
And with the strike, looming, like he could not miss any work. Like if they're going to go on strike, you got to make all the money you can right now in case you're on strike. So he couldn't go.
Man, what a bummer, because I know how big a fan he is, and that's kind of, I mean, I know it's Sacramento, but that's in his neck of the woods.
Yeah, yeah. But it's, you know, it's also a bummer, too, because, I mean, obviously he's got to work, respect his job, do all that, make some money, and as much as the Metallica, you know, going to one show could, you know, risk a lot for him.
Yeah, and he's newly married, so now it's not just him going to the shows. You got to buy 2 tickets, you got to feed 2 people, you've got to, you know.
Yeah, the 2 have become 1.
Yeah, 2 tickets to paradise,
Okay, so you've become the ambassador, at least for Joe, but I'm sure that you had plans to see a bunch of other Metallica nerds up there, right?
So then after that was Aftershock itself. So we did the however many days at Aftershock. We picked up Aaron from the airport. Aaron stayed with us at my cousin's house. Mm-hmm. And then our other friend, Phil, who lives in San Francisco, he stayed with us. And my cousin, she's like super cool. She's just like, have all your friends come stay here. Let's have a big dinner. Let's do this. You know, she's kind of like me. It's like, so she was like, didn't care if we invited all our crazy friends over just to stay for 5 days.
Wow.
Dang.
I don't know if I would be that generous.
I could be persuaded, but
I'm like, invite all your friends over and I can show them where the nearest hotels are.
Yeah. Or you can make some tents. I got a big backyard.
Yeah, I guess we in our world, we tour so often, we don't have a lot of privacy. And so the idea of doing that in my house isn't that intriguing.
Right.
But if you never get to see your buddies and you don't live like vagabonds in hotels like we do.
Yeah.
5 nights with a bunch of people in a house having sharing meals together sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah. And my cousin has 2 kids. One's in college and one's a senior in high school. So she's used to having just like tons of kids at her house all the time. Yeah. So when there's nobody there, it's like weird for her.
So did you have any expectations for the Aftershock gigs? Did you even care? Were you just so glad to see the boys again?
It was so weird because going in, knowing we're not going to line up for the rail because, you know, I don't like festivals. It's a lot of work and it's tiring and long days. And especially if you're on the rail. But the beauty of the festival is that you get to see other bands that you never thought you'd ever be interested in or never knew of. And all of a sudden I have like a few new bands I'm starting to follow, which have been around forever, but I'm just kind of, you know, I get on the wagon a little bit late in life. Sure. So.
Well, what were some of the bands that you were stoked to see that you're now fans of?
Suicidal Tendencies, Pennywise, and Social Distortion. I love them.
Yeah, I was really jealous of everyone that got to see Social Distortion at that festival. They're one of my favorite bands. I've seen them multiple times, but they still kick mm-hmm. ass, you know.
When I started listening to Metallica, I was like, I don't like metal. And now all this, you know, however many years later, I'm a really big metal fan. And I've always thought of myself as a rock and roll kind of person. And now I'm like really into punk. So I'm like, I think that the festivals and things like, even like the Orion festivals where Metallica kind of handpicked the bands so that people could see what else is out there, it's really been opening my eyes and helping me just be a bigger fan of just music in general.
It's a little thing we like to call tasting the rainbow.
Exactly.
And when I say we like to call it, I don't think we've ever said that exact phrase.
We have not, but I'm excited for you to expand your, you know, your musical horizons. That's awesome.
I feel like I'm at a point now of my age where I'm like, I would be like wanting to see new bands, but also wanting to conserve energy. You know, that would definitely be a priority. Like, but you, like you said, you're not riding the rail. So if you're hanging back, you're taking it kind of easy. What number Metallica show was it for you and Pete?
The second show was 75.
Wow.
Okay. Do you know what Aaron's number is now?
I think he's at 101 or 102. It's funny because the first Metal Tales I did with you guys, I think was number 40.
Wow.
And now I'm at 75.
Dang. Well, pardon my language, but holy shnikes.
I would like for us now to take a brief moment and go through all 74 and rank them in order of favorites.
Yeah, it shouldn't take too long.
If that's cool with everybody.
Sure, we got time.
Well, number one was Webster Hall.
Yeah, totally.
Number two was Little Rock on the Rail with you.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite shows as well. I think about that all the time. Okay, cool. Well, let's get into the show. So who else did you hang out with anyone else during Aftershock?
We met up with Casey and her husband, Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
And they're so cute. Like, we hung out with them both days, but on Sunday show, there's a VIP rail and then there's the regular GA rail. VIP area wasn't good viewing at all. You could barely see that. You couldn't see the band members at all. You could see the stage, but you had to really watch them from the big screens. So her and Jesse are so cute. They text me when they got there and they're like, we got a place on the rail. We're holding a spot on the rail for you guys. And I was like, you know, they're not young. They're young, but they're not super young. Like, they're not in their 30s and 40s or even 50s like the rest of us. They're holding us a spot on the rail. And they held it. Like, they did not move. They're like, we're holding a spot on the rail. And then we were able to, you know, we've got some rail skills to squeeze it into more people. They held it for like two. We squeezed it into like five. And then we were on the VIP rail the second night during the Black Album.
Yeah, it's like the laws of physics change around the rail.
Oh, yeah.
I've found.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I know he was standing behind me and he's like, how'd you do that?
Both of my rail experiences, I was able to just go there and just stand right there. And I couldn't believe it was going to happen. It almost felt too good to be true.
Right.
But yeah. I have seen, while being there, the people who kind of muscle their way through and all the dynamics of rail riding, as
well,
they
say. Did that in Birmingham with Sarah. Being a tall guy, I really had some anxiety about it. Because I got up to where you and Clint were, and right behind me is a girl that's maybe 5'3". She was not stoked that I was standing in front of her out of nowhere.
Mm.
She got to watch Metallica on your battle vest.
Exactly.
That was her Metallica show that night.
I think I saw James over his left shoulder.
Well, let's talk about the set list a little bit. So they build this as two unique set lists. They kind of, a little bit of a shortcut with by playing the Black Album.
Yeah, yeah.
But because, you know, they're saying like however many unique songs a night, which is pretty cool, though. So I'm guessing you paid attention to the Chicago show or the pop-up shows. So you probably had some idea about what was going to happen. Did you know they were going to be doing Black Album on night two?
I mean, I had heard, and I, you know, from other people, especially that went to Louisville, and it's the 30th anniversary. So I kind of at some point just expected it. But to be honest, as much as happy as I was to hear the Black Album in its entirety, because it's awesome and it's an album that brings a lot of fans on, and I was really happy to hear it. And some of the songs you forget are even on the album. You're like, oh my God, that was on the album. I haven't heard it in its entirety in so long. But I was a little disappointed that they chose to do the Black Album, because during the Orion festivals, they'd already played the Black Album in its entirety. They played Ride the Lightning in its entirety. They played Kill 'Em All in its entirety. And I'm like, can you play like Justice or Master of Puppets or one of the Loads? Like, I feel like they have so much more. They could have played a different album in its entirety, but I get it. It's the 30th anniversary. It's festivals. You kind of want those fans. Those fans don't know the deeper stuff at these festivals because they're not all just Metallica fans. So I get it.
Yeah, you've got a Social Distortion fan going, what's Don't Tread on Me?
Yeah, exactly. A Pennywise fan going, The Struggle Within. I don't know this Metallica number.
Well, so night one, though, it's kind of similar to what they did on the club shows, opening with Whiplash. Mm-hmm. That's pretty fun. Whiplash into Ride the Lightning, I would have been pretty excited
punch. I love that.
And where were you at on the first show? You rode the rail for the second one, but where were you on the first one?
Well, the first one, we started out deep in the crowd. So I was on stage right, and that's where the rail is, like complete stage right, along the side of stage right. And so we're looking at it from an angle, just very uneven surfaces. So we all ended up, except for Pete. Pete was very persistent. He ended up getting to the rail. The rest of us went and sat down in the lounge and watched it on the big screen.
It sounds like a good time, too.
That's my speed right there.
Oh, yeah.
So you and Pete are interesting because you guys have do this so much together. You're so tight that sometimes one of you will ride the rail, one of you will hang back. You guys are cool just splitting up. You're like, I'll just see you afterwards.
Yep. We got like coats, you know, we were in the army. We got some signs we do to each other. We could see where we are. And
you shoot a flare in the middle of a festival. No big deal.
Meeting up.
Sarah has a bandana launcher that goes up in the air, and the bandana illuminates in the sky.
Right. And then it turns into canaries and they all fly away.
Yeah. And then they fly towards Pete first and guide him back. Right. And then they fly away.
It's a magic bandana sitch.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any like notable moments from night one that we could talk about? I mean, the set list is fun. Whiplash, Lightning, Harvey, Cyanide, Memory One, Frantic, Moth, No Leaf Clover, Bells, Whiskey, Fade to Black, Puppets, Battery, Fuel Seek. Whiskey in the Jar would be fun to see.
Very. Yeah. Same as Cyanide.
I loved the set list. Night one, the set list was awesome. That was like, not that I didn't want to see night two, but night one alone was like, that would have made the entire weekend for me. But my favorite part was when they were about to play Frantic and James says to the crowd, we're about to play one off your favorite album.
Mm.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
He knows. He knows the deal.
They know the deal. They absolutely do.
I'm sure the artistic side of him is real proud of all the work that they did, but he knows that that's not everyone's cup of tea.
Yeah, there's no secret.
But I'm telling you, and I don't know if you felt this way, Sarah, but at this point, I would be more interested to see Frantic than some songs, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's interesting. And it sounds good live.
It sounds good live, yeah. I mean, they're adding leads into it. Obviously, you don't have any of the sonic issues on the record that you do live. So, yeah, it would be exciting to see something like that or some kind of monster or Chain Anger or whatever. Dirty Window.
How did it sound? How did Frantic sound?
They sounded great. The entire weekend, they sounded great. I hate saying like the pandemic helped anything in any way, but I really feel like they got well rested and tuned up whatever they need to tune up in their bodies, and they were just on point. Like, they killed it.
Well, I love hearing that.
Oh yeah.
And then so they go off for the encore, they come out with Battery, Fuel, and Seek. What was your feeling in the crowd with like the casuals that we mentioned, like Social Distortion fans versus, like, did they stick around? Were they, could you, because I tend to do that at shows. Like, I tend to look around and see what everyone's vibe is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What was that like at Aftershock?
To tell you the truth, I don't know if it was that they were that into the songs or just the crowd was just into being back to life. I don't know that they really knew all the songs, and especially for people who only came night one. Like, I do feel a little bad for them because they were probably waiting for the Enter Sandmans or, you know, whatever else that they normally hear. But it didn't seem like the crowd lost any interest the entire time.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's cool. Well, I imagine if you're a huge concert goer, I mean, coming back, you know, maybe Aftershock was a first show for a lot of people coming back. I know for me, playing my first show back was really exciting. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, even like maybe some casuals maybe stuck it out because the energy was great in the crowd and they're, you know, watching a kick-ass band.
Yeah, it's like, I don't care who's playing. I'm going to watch whatever you put in front of me.
Right.
Yeah, and it's I guess when we do all the, like, we're so into the band that we can be like, oh, okay, another, you know, whatever, another Enter Sandman or whatever, but they're one of the best bands in the world, so even if you're not that familiar, when you're beholding them, you're kind of just down for whatever ride they want to take you on.
Yeah, and the production's amazing, so it's something fun to watch.
So, did anything happen on the night between? Was there a party or anything?
There was a party at this, I can't remember what the bar was called. Locked Barrel or something. So there was a party in between. It was kind of Blackened themed. And apparently, because we learned hindsight, on the way home from Sacramento, there was a bunch of signed bottles from Rob at that same bar. The original plan was that Rob was going to be at the pre-party signing those bottles.
Mm.
Interesting. So then he just sent them along already pre-signed.
Right. And they got there too late. So now everyone's gone home and it's now Tuesday and went and just picked up too many bottles for people who weren't able to get their hands on it. So I have like two cases of signed Rob Blackens in my dining room.
Dang.
Wow. See, you're either very generous or an alcoholic.
Yeah, you might need to seek help.
So. Or both, actually, judging by the night at the Cellar.
Are you trying to recreate your time with Clinton, New York?
So let's talk about night two. Anything other than you rode the rail with Casey, which sounds really fun. Casey, of course, is Ray's daughter.
Yeah, it's so much fun.
I'm going to look at the night two set list here, which I know they played the Black Album, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But let's see what they did right before that.
Night one set list by far was the best set list.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, seeing some of these Black Album deep cuts would be so awesome.
And even some of the extras. I mean, Four Horsemen isn't that common anymore. Mm-hmm. Fight Fire with Fire.
Yeah, Fight Fire with Fire. That's pretty cool. Ending with Creep. Was there a difference in the crowd vibe from night one and night two?
So night two, it was a different vibe for me because the first night we sat in a lounge, or the lounge area. So I didn't really, you know, I really like the... It's very, what's the word? Anti-social distancing. I don't know what the right word is, but I need like the squishiness of people around me. Like I like the vibe of all the people becoming like one unit and like, you know. So is that anti-social distancing rules and whatever? Like it's hard to do that, but I kind of need that at a Metallica concert to get that full adrenaline rush that I get. And so that second night when we got on the rail was a little more my style.
Yeah, right.
You felt the community around you.
Yeah, I felt the community felt like we were one. You know, we all just became one. So at that night, we also ran into Sasha and Nicole. And Sasha, we got Sasha on the rail with us. So we pulled Sasha in and we hung with her the whole time. So that was fun too.
Yeah. Well, if you're going to get stuck on the rail with someone, Sasha and Nicole are two of the nicest. Yeah.
There you go. Perfect.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Did you come to the party that they came to? I don't remember which party that was. The third year?
I believe that was the year when Metallica played the next night.
No.
That wasn't that one? It was the year before then. It wasn't year one. It was year two.
It was year three.
Year five.
Did you come to that one, Sarah? I don't remember if you were at that one. It was one that Lizzie Hale was at.
I only came to.
Okay, yeah.
No. That one we sent in a video.
That's right. That's right.
And I thought that video meant you guys were going to walk in the back door at any moment because you were setting it up for that, for sure. Pete was.
I'm not even lying. We that was my original plan.
And we appreciate that. That was that whole night was a blast getting those videos and so, and you know, from the Anthrax dudes and all that stuff was pretty dang cool.
Master.
All right. Well, you just heard we had some technical difficulties with Sarah. Unfortunately, we could not finish the tale. But it was good to check in with her. We love the Sobeks. We love Sarah and Pete. I'm glad they were able to get out there and do what they do best, which is love on people.
Absolutely.
And hang out with folks, stay at some houses, enjoy some collections. And we love you out there, Sarah and Pete. You guys keep at it, and we hope we get to see you when we come back to New York in the winter.
Absolutely, for sure.
And everyone take care of yourselves, take care of your families. We'll see you on the flippity-floppity. Peace.
Adios.
Our advisor, what would you say? Then I would say, delete that.